So I wanted to talk about today what has been a big inspiration for me in my practice, and what has led me to the decision of going to Tassajara and kind of making a big leap into devoting my life to this practice. So the theme that I kind of want to talk about and talk around, hopefully talk to, is practice enlightenment. Our basically like the fundamental aspect or theme of our practice in the Soto Zen tradition. You know, a lot of times we'll talk about how everything we do is practice enlightenment, whether it be screwing the nail or hitting the hammer, hitting the nail with the hammer, or taking a crap on the toilet, washing dishes. Let's all practice enlightenment. But to me, I also think that there's definitely the potential and the reality of practice delusion or practice ignorance, which I always kind of had a conflict with, where I understand the concept. I always understood the concept of everything is Buddha nature, or everything has Buddha nature. That rings true to me. But it didn't help me so well when I was, you know, the guy in traffic screaming at, you know, the person in front of me and the person behind me and to the sides. That reality that the car, the wheels that the car rolls on, and the person driving it are all Buddha nature. That reality didn't help me much at all. I found myself suffering immensely in that reality. So if everything is that, and everything that I do is practice enlightenment, how is that true, that I experience such discord and suffering within my present experience? I've been reading the precepts a lot lately. I'm sewing my rakusu again. I never finished it before, and now I'm making a valiant attempt to do it again, or complete sewing it and then get jukai. So the precepts have been a big emphasis in my practice lately. And Robert Aitken Roshi, and I got the book so generously from Doug to assist me in my practice studying the precepts. He wrote this book called Mind of Clover, and he talks about how the fulfillment of the precepts are a quieted mind, or a rested mind, or a tranquil mind, that when the mind is boundless, when we are experiencing boundless mind, we fulfill the precepts in their totality, all 10, 16, 200, and whatever in the Vinaya. We fulfill that in each breath, in each moment. When we're moving from boundless mind, or big mind, as Suzuki Roshi calls it. So I think that for me, practice enlightenment has very much to do with a great emphasis on sitting zazen. I've experienced this boundless mind doing kung fu, martial arts, where I've done intensive practice and training for hours, and especially when I'm sparring, and it's kind of like a game of chess, and I'm absorbed in this movement, in this flow, you know, with a partner, and where me and a partner become this one dance. It's this one experience that unfolds and flows. And I didn't really understand that. I didn't understand what that was, that experience. I loved it. It was great. It was like, whoa, you know, this is awesome. But I didn't understand that what that was until I had a certain level of experience in zazen. So I think that especially for a Soto Zen practitioner, it's important for me anyway, and I feel like it may be important for all of us, to emphasize awakened mind or a boundless mind, to emphasize zazen, and to not for me not to get caught up in the idea that everything that I do is that, is enlightenment, or is a practice of enlightenment. But to find that sense of stillness, so that sense of boundlessness in my Zazen practice, and then see how that maybe communicates or informs the rest of my life and my daily activities. The other day I found myself experienced a situation where I just knew, you know, it wasn't true to the Dharma and it wasn't true to the practice. And I found myself, you know, all of a sudden I noticed that I was really suffering, you know. And there was a sense inside of me that felt like screaming out, "No, it isn't true." And then I kind of checked into that, like, you know, what I'm suffering. What is this that I'm feeling? And I started to feel my body, and I felt this constriction in the solar plexus area. And I had to ask myself, like, what is this feeling that I have, and who has it, and who's suffering with this right now? And, you know, in that moment where I was suffering, I wasn't experiencing boundless mind. I wasn't moving from Zazen. I was moving from, I was practicing ignorance. The moment that I turned the light inward and checked into my experience and had the potential to ask the question of who is experiencing the suffering and why, I experienced liberation from that. You know, I experienced, oh, this is an idea of what practice should be, how practice should be, what's right and wrong, what's true and false. The discriminating mind, the small mind, had been my base of operation. So in a short period of time, I experienced practice delusion and practice enlightenment. Then I think for me, one way that I can sit with that and understand it is that there's two aspects of being a human being. There's constantly or always being, which is that boundless mind, which is the reality of what we are. Everything that we touch is that within that experience of boundless mind. So everything is boundless mind. And then there's always becoming, the person that I am, the ignorance that I am constantly experiencing and either chasing after and playing with or meddling in the mud or transcending. I had set this log up here during the last session. The last day of session, I had the experience of boundless mind, and it gave me the inspiration to take the Buddha, the beautiful carved Buddha up there, and bow to him, surely, but then take him down and hide him somewhere, and then put the log up here on the altar. So, and then I chose
the tools.
Yeah, and I chose to put the chisel and the mallet there. Because this is the potential of our practice, you know, to chisel away at this lump of rough edges, this roughness that we see before us, that I see before in my experience when I actually take a look at myself. This kind of like gnarled up, beautiful in its own right, but rough and sharp edges. And I realized in that moment, as the Baijis walking Kinhin, that there is, that a Baija is that Buddha nature. Baija is that big mind. And the process of my practice of enlightenment or my Zazen and everything that I do is taking the mallet to the chisel to the log. And I find that really important, that metaphor, because I think it's so easy for me anyway to get caught up in the beautiful idea that everything is Buddha nature. And not emphasize the deep necessity to practice. Like it's like the most important thing in my life is to reveal that Buddha in this. So I feel like every effort should be that. Should be in that. And at the same time, not take myself so seriously, because I know that this is the Buddha. I've experienced it through sitting zazen, experiencing boundless mind. I've experienced it through doing qigong, tai chi type exercises. I've experienced it through, as Doug said, screwing screws and pounding nails. So as an individual, I can hold it, I can realize that my practice is really fundamental to my experience and how my experience is going to be. My level of suffering and my level of peace and contentment is directly affected by and related to my practice. So, as I enter the Zendo and sit down with the no gaining idea, I gain the world, I gain my life, I gain freedom and peace and happiness. And lately I've been thinking about Sangha. Like, I've noticed how delusion of one mind can become all minds, the total mind, the big mind. And enlightenment can become the whole mind, everything. So we have great potential individually and as a Sangha to experience big mind and how we hold our practice individually, but then as a Sangha, I feel is pretty much all we can do. And I feel it's really important, you know, how I deal with myself as I sit down and I see this really kind of goofed up person who has these crazy ideas and is a bit arrogant at times and then nice at other times. I mean, he has all these great qualities, but then understanding that also on a relative level, that Abijah is the product of his environment, his society, his culture, his family. Everything's created this person. So as I see all these rough edges and these hard edges, I can be a little soft with them. I don't have to condemn them to be an evil entity or a bad person, or I can just see that, you know, through my process of in this life, I've acquired these rough edges, and it gives me something to do, you know. I like to work, you know. I like to chisel away. So I try to take that at the same time, and I see just a huge value in it to take that same level of understanding that I've experienced with myself and do that with the rest of the people that I practice with. And then out from there, the rest of the people that I practice with that aren't even really aware of it, you know, to the whole world, if I can. Oh, That's about all that I have. It was a lot longer during Zazen, but so thank you. So we kick this idea around.
What initially brought you to Jikoji?
Initially, I was initially what brought me to the practice was suffering. I was at a point of like low spiritual. I was at a spiritual deprived point in my life, and I was at the point to where I completely disagreed with Christianity, a lot of the ways that it's practiced, and I mean I was at the point where I was like going and knocking on the doors of the church. You know, I was in a deep, desperate place, and so what I had found was. Insight Meditation Center first. Mm-hmm. And so I was practicing Vipassana initially, and the same wave that I have right now of this desire to just throw everything into the practice, you know, I had that back 7 years ago, 8 years ago. After I've been practicing for about a year and a half maybe, I had this desire that nothing else mattered except for this, except for realization, you know. And so I was going to become homeless and kind of just donate all my stuff and live out of my car and, just have the ability to just practice to study and meditate, at free will. And then a friend said, well, you don't have to become homeless. You know, there's places that'll support you, support your practice. So he brought me up here and that's how I ended up here.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm imagining a piece of wood like that for each one of us in here. Each one different. Each one shaped by the circumstances of our lives. Each one different and each one equal and each one full of possibilities. Thank you for that metaphor.
Sometimes I think of Moses at the burning bush. You know, the translation Yahweh, the pentagram, it's done roughly in Hebrew is existence. So, what should I call? who should I say told me this? And the response was, existence told you this. Mm. But there's something special about that. And a fascicle in beginner's mind puzzled me, still puzzles me, but was rather difficult for me. It's one of the first chapters in which Suzuki Roshi speaks about posture and doing zazen, how to sit in posture. And toward the end of it, he says, there's no need to think of any special state of mind. If you're doing that, you're wobbling around. There shouldn't be any wobble. Just to sit in this posture is enough. That's the conclusion of Buddhism. What do you make of that?
Something else that he said that I really love is that it's kind of like walking through the misty forest and all of a sudden you find yourself completely saturated. When, for me, if I surrender to the posture, to the breath, That is being saturated, finding myself, informed by existence, in a sense.
If that is so, why do you need to hammer and chisel?
You don't. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, that's something that I kind of went back and forth with for a long time, and you really don't, but then I have to at the same time. I almost feel like even going to Tassajara and making these big decisions, I don't have a choice, you know. For some reason I was given this burning flame that's just consuming, you know. And I think all of us have that at some point, stronger, at some points not so strong, but we all have that burning flame that says, go chisel, you know, go chisel away, even though it's not necessary.
You know, I had a teacher once who said, if you sit Zazen, Zazen works on you. If you work on Zazen, Zazen works on you. Mm-hmm. And so that, it seems to me that when you're sitting Zazen, something about Zazen is doing the chiseling, mm-hmm. is doing the hammering and the scraping.
Yeah.
That's my sense of that. The practice itself. He's doing work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't understand how faith could enter into this practice until that kind of started to reveal itself a little bit. Like, oh, I can have faith in just sitting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Here, and mm-hmm. I really resonated with a lot of things that you said. You know, I like kind of the idea of rough edges and living in community, and I haven't figured out how to live in this world and not be around other people. And so my rough edges rub up against other people's rough edges, and it's uncomfortable sometimes. So I really liked what you said about that place of self-inquiry, and I've been doing that a lot in my own life lately, like, he's not, she's not, they're not. What am I feeling right now? Oh, I can't, my chest feels tight, my stomach hurts, I don't feel good. Well, what's that? You know, oh, I'm scared, or I'm angry, I'm fearful. And usually it's anger that's covering up maybe fear, that's covering up grief, you know, and when I can get down below all those layers, you know, and touch into to my grief of, you know, loss or sadness, then and express that in a way that doesn't make all the other people around me wrong, you know, this is my experience, you know, it's what I'm experiencing right now, then there's oftentimes a chance for connection there, and takes the fight out of the words, and so it's been an interesting practice, and I just am so glad to hear you talk about that a little bit, because it's been very helpful in my life right now.
I appreciate the again the sort of focus on Zazen, especially in contrast to the various ideas or teachings that we get. And I think it's very important for us to always. That's one thing I like about the general Buddhist approach to teachings and the way teachings are given. Is that virtually all of the teachings are basically sharings by people who have had these various insights and understandings. And if somebody
is able to say, well, everything is Buddha nature or something. It's just that person is just sharing a profound experience that she had or he had at some point, or perhaps occasionally. But it's not a description of a belief which we must have, or even a goal that we should prop up in front of us. But it's just we are given all these teachings as kind of encouragements, and sometimes it's tastier than other times. And I think it's wonderful that we can receive teachings which are fundamentally sharings and offerings rather than demands. So I think that it's wonderful to have the sitting practice as the real focus rather than any particular ideas.
Yeah, I've never heard a teacher said, bring your life into the Zendo onto your cushion. But I've heard numerous times to bring your Zazen from your cushion to your life. I think it's really important, you know. Zazen, or whatever your form of surrendering to your present experience is. You know.
I have a question here.
Oh, no.
It's an easy one. Mm-hmm. You know, we feel a lot in our lives. And how do you address your feelings? I appreciate you talking about looking here or how it feels. But how did you learn that?
I mean, probably a lot by the just teachings and kind of like Jiro saying that I was, you know, I've heard a lot of gifts given of others' experience. And then to not want to be asleep has been a big reason of why I learned that, or how I learned that. Just the desire not to react, the desire to know myself and to wake up, you know. But I love koan practice in a sense, you know, asking the question, who am I? But not in an intellectual way, but in a feeling or sensing into it way. And I feel like that's kind of the same thing that practice is, when I ask or feel into or inquire with a deep sense of knowing, wanting to know of who am I. I can kind of be with my feelings and see them, but sometimes I just spill them out all over everyone else. But I mean, I think that's like that for all of us. I mean, for me anyway, I feel like I'm obviously not the youngest person in practice, but fairly, I have a ways to go, you know. And I've been hanging around for a while enough to see myself completely delusional, you know. And when I'm not checking in with myself and my feelings, I'm reacting poorly to the circumstances in my life. So I guess it's from a desire not to react poorly, but to respond appropriately. And not wanting to suffer either, you know. Because when I don't do what you're talking about, I find myself in a state of anguish and despair and suffering, kind of like what Holly was talking about, you know, that there's all this going on, and without a method or a way of processing it and getting to a point of transcendence. I'm kind of, you know, swimming in quicksand. You know. Does that answer your question at all?
Getting stuck deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
Thank you.